Russell, how are you?
Mr. President, how are you?
How are you doing?
You said you guys are so busy giving us hell, but,
you said you've got,
Listen, I'm just kidding. This is the 73 picture, sir.
Well, see, I like the picture, there's all I'm telling you something.
Say at the outset something that you got in my letter. concerns me is that, on housing, on the food stamps, and on this other thing, we have all these programs that are designed to help the poor. If there were some way the Social Security thing deals with it, because what it does, John, is to put the money in the hands of the working poor, and then they do what they damn please with it. Now, in the housing thing, is there something to this idea of having an allowance? I mean, a housing allowance for people that are shop below a certain income level, rather than just going in and say, we build new housing for you, and then you gotta live here. You get my point?
No.
I don't know. Think about it, will you?
Well,
I don't know.
I think that insofar as I have a problem, it'll come to my
appointment, you can say, you talk to the president, and we both agree, let's give them a positive incentive. The question is, though, it must be a positive incentive we can afford.
Yeah.
It can't be one like the, like Kennedy's and Hamilton River Crossing, which goes too far. And that we are actually exploring to find positive incentives. I think, John, if you don't mind, I'm going to quote you that, but
I want you to go to know.
I don't want to talk to. Let me tell you the perks of this meeting. I want you to know the purpose of this meeting. Is this, I think all this crap, you know, I told Mills, which is going to be all the university in their lab, you know. I said, you remember we had a hell of a flap because who's going to get the credit off the Japanese textbook? And you were mad because you thought you'd done it. Some people said, I said, I don't give a damn who gets the credit. So we both did it. And I said, now on this housing, and we want to talk the same way, not on this, but on this, we were talking about trade legislation in terms of the taxes and all that sort of thing. What we want to do is to work with you folks. And sure, we'll have an administration program. But we know that we can send an administration program down there. And unless, for example, you on the Senate side, as the leading Democrat, and Mills on the House side, if you're not for it, it ain't going to get through. So in other words, what we want to do is to work out a deal. And it doesn't mean you Mills boys agree either. We want to work out a situation where we can cooperate with the congressional leadership, Democrat and Republican, in getting programs that we can get through. Let me put it another way. I had sent down a whole lot of tax reform measures, welfare reform measures, and then beat the Congress over the head for failing to pass it. I'm not going to do that. I want some action. I'm not just going to make politics with it. Really, that's my deal. And so therefore, before we send things down, it doesn't mean we're going to give to tell you that if you're against something, we're not going to send it. We can't do that. But we're going to at least convince ourselves that this doesn't just run totally. respect for you. We've got to think of the fact that years down the line, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, the leader of China, the leader of Russia is going to look at this office. And what I had to go through in these past 4 years, particularly these past 4 months, means that whoever's the head of China and Russia is going to respect this office because they feel that, well, the President of the United States has a lot of power and he might use it. You see, that's what it's all about. So it's respect that we're talking about here. It's respect all the way through. Well, I digress. But the point that I make is that in terms of this whole area, if we can
direction, can't be predicted, but doesn't hold, would you? The chances are pretty good that you pick up a third building, you know. If you take, I like to leave it, myself, Talmadge, Bird, and Benson, the chances are pretty good that you pick up four buildings on our side. Yeah, so that
you've got four responsibles, right?
So that if you've got five on your side, yeah, five on your seven, that would do about what would seem to be the right thing, you'd be in pretty good shape. So I really think that from your point of view, the division will be sold.
Let me turn, if I can, to the tax field and tell you first, just let me tell you what I'm committed to. And second, Mills, apparently, Mayor Mills is holding hearings on that now. They have to start the expansion. As far as the tax, you know, I resisted all efforts to talk about all the argument that Beaver so-called tax reform in the campaign, because I thought it was demagoguery a lot of it, and so we didn't get into it. But there are two commitments I made that I really, of course, I'm not impressed on, and I hope you can help us. One, the tax credit for private schools. That's my view. And I should tell you, I think that
by way of an act of Congress, which is your alternative, you do it either way. You want to go by way of an act of just don't get anything at all.
The only one I'm thinking to her away, we could separate out the damn foundation so that the charities were churches and colleges and so forth.
Yeah.
I prefer private colleges, frankly, than public colleges, you know?
Yeah.
You gotta have both.
Yeah, sure.
But, so I don't like to see anything that frankly will hurt the contributions to the private institutions. Foundations are, incidentally, I frankly think this is just among us here, but I think Russell, somebody's got to look into the tax status that he's got in that foundations.
I
don't know who's gonna do it. I tell you, somebody's gonna be a hero when he does.
I think that's right.
Some of them are good, but some of these foundations, some of the big ones, Mr., are engaged in activities that are shocking.
I just learned to get
I know, but thing about saying, all right, now we won't tax it till you run your money back in here or some of those things. So you had some kind of trade-off in this thing. I mean, even though the trade-off of what they're getting might be practically nothing at the same time. That is, again, where you go overseas, you deduct all the expenses, and then you find something, the foreign tax credit offsets the income tax bill with the corporate level, I understand.
It's the only place I know of in the Internal Revenue Code where you can deduct your gambling losses, but you don't have to declare your winnings.
That's very good. Oh, yeah, that's exactly what it does. The judge put it very well down. Is that right? Well, that ought to be dealt with in the future. Now you get back to the fundamental thing. You get into the whole oil import thing and the rest. And of course, there you have a basic argument. Let me ask you, just to digress a moment, what do you think about the, and we're going to be talking to you about energy at a later time, so not really premature slogans. But what do you think about the proposition? The proposition on the gas of removing the generated price and removing the price on natural gas.
Well, I think. don't see how that you can let people who've got gas under contract, which says that they can get to go and market price, be denied in depth the right to have what the contract calls for. So the process was that I think that you can phase it in to cushion the impact. But I don't see how that in the long run you can deny somebody the right to sell this part of the way it works in a free economy. Now, as far as the oil thing is concerned, as I said, I thought about that. It seems to me that one of the, if you buy the concept, which I think is correct, that the security of this nation, not only security, but its commitment to the free world, means that not only must we be able to produce our requirements of fuel in the event that we can't buy it from somebody, or that anybody can keep it from being delivered here, but that we can even take fuel to friendly nations that don't have their own, to see them through it. We did at the time of the Suez Crisis, and we had to divert our stuff over to Europe to help them, to try to tell them, look, don't go to war for your fuel. We'll provide you with some fuel if you just won't wait for Egypt. Well, then, so that they had no good excuse to go to war against Egypt. Now, we have to do those kinds of things. It seems to me that that you're going to have to maintain domestic fuel industry. And all the thing about keeping the oil in the ground is just so much baloney. It would take you 5 years to ever get the wells drilled to produce the oil, for example, because all you're talking about. It'll take you some amount of time to build a plant if you've got to try to make it out of shale or out of coal. If you're going to be ready for an emergency, you can't predict when it'll happen. And that being the case, you've got to have an industry that's ready, able, and actually operating in order to do it to meet your emergency. You can't wait 5 years in the emergency is to get the fuel. You've got to have it then. And so you've got to have an industry that's capable of producing it. My thought would be that I'd say, what percentage of the energy requirements do we propose to produce here in this country? Pick a figure, any figure you want. Offhand, I'm going to say 75%, but you can say 70%. Pick any figure you want. What percent will we produce here? Now, when you take that figure, I think that when things settle down, you're going to have to let the market determine both the price and the supply. In other words, if the price is right, the supply will come to it. You take all these people without shale, they've got to keep us going for 500 years out there, or maybe longer than that. But they're not producing any oil from it because our people keep saying, well, keep the price of oil low enough so that these fellows won't have any incentive to bring the shale in. Well, if you're going to be needing the oil from the shale, you're going to have the price go up, come up to where the shale will be produced. Now, solar energy right now is not economically feasible. As a practical matter, in most of the country, you can't justify atomic power. You can produce it cheaper with your standard fuels, with fossil fuels. But if you let the price determine what the market's going to be, let the price determine the supply. Then I think that the whole thing will come into line, and you'll be able to the market, the price will bring the supply to whatever you want to maintain that amount of your market, let's say 75%. Now, with your imports, if you want to, you can use that, you can charge a price on the tickets that will support a stockpile if you want to have a stockpile. That'd be find a way to pay for it. Say, all right, now, you've got to carry a stockpile adequate to carry us through an unforeseen stretch of bad weather or in a mass emergency where we have to go to help a foreign country. And so you stockpile some and you've got to proceed through the emergency and you make the tickets bear the cost of carrying the stockpile. I think you ought to also keep those small refineries operating. If somebody gets tracked to the atomic war, that's all you're going to have left. Refine anything with all these big, magnificent, efficient coastal refineries that they've gone on the first day of the fighting in all probability. It's not that they've gone in a week. You can't defend them. The easiest target on earth. not going to fight it, and are not able to. So I just think that whether you like it or not, you're going to have to let the price of energy go up in this country until the price of bringing our stuff in. Now, people in my part of the country, when they're talking about 50 cent gas or 90 cent gas, which is all of which is below what you pay to bring gas in from foreign lands, land in New York, man, they get so excited, all these poor devils that have gone out of the office, they just want to go back into it. Say, my God, if you pay that price of gas, I think I know where I can find some. But obviously, if you think you can't get for 17 cents, they can't make any money at that.
That's what Georgia's economist calls elasticity of supply.
Now, let me suggest two things here on the energy one, John. You know, one of the lawyers, if you would be sure that there's always a concern on some of these ideas on that. And of course, we've got the Congress cuts through the administration sign on the treasuries. And as far as we're going, very, very good management. You might have a point where you'll find it very involved. On the tax thing, what I would like to do with George is to have you run over with the Russell some of the other specifics he may have. I don't plan to be an expert in the tax field, but let me say I'm a total realist. I don't want to. First, I mentioned the two things we've got to have: secondary convictions on implication. Third, if there's a gross inequity and people aren't paying any tax, that simply gives the radicals something to beat us over the head with, so we remove that. On the other hand, and this is the important thing I want to emphasize, I will not support any tax reform measure which is demagoguery the other way, which basically makes a few cheap points by kicking business around. Any tax reform that has the effect of in any way punishing unfairly producers in this country, the wealth producers or people that acquire wealth, I want to support.
I'm glad you say that,
because I just don't believe in it, and frankly, I'll take the heat on it, I know. But now you, there's going to be a tendency down there in the Congress for everybody to say, well, we got to kick the rich folks around. Hell, the rich folks, except in this business, have paid minimum and unfair advantage and so forth, or in any kind of a place where you can get wealthy people to get their money to all productive uses, that's a different thing. But just to kick the rich folks around because Woodcock thinks we ought to, I'm not for it.
Well, that's my view. Well, I'll ban Mr. President. My temptation is to play a little bit of politics with this. They send us something in my house. It's totally irresponsible from all that. My temptation is to put something on our side, something that's equally irresponsible. I bought it as much demagoguing as they do. Time to go to Congress and say, okay, I'll drop mine if you'll drop yours. So they put in something that's going to kick the living hell out of somebody and raise a $500 billion. I'd just like to put something in to raise about $500 million and kick the hell out of somebody else. So that I'm going to probably, well, you'll drop yours, I'll drop mine. And oftentimes, that's one way to resolve some of those things. Sometimes you've got to answer a fool according to his folly. Otherwise, they kind of put you in a position that we bought the finance committee, or in here trying to look after vested interests. You recall some of the cartoons they had last time in the House, and us, that so-called tax reform, but even before they were whipping them away on the tax reform thing, so I was up with like a pencil that long by the time we got through with the way over by the old double up. You see, well, sometimes we have to start thinking about the politics of this thing on our side. Now, Frank, in here, tax reform, aside from this thing, I'm just saying, tightening up on the minimum income tax, in fact, I'm not excited about any institution, but I would think it'd be our advantage to play that game to some extent. So, they put something responsible on their side, put something that needs to be responsible on our side. So, go to Congress and drop the bolt out. But the one thing I wanted to try to avoid, if I could head it off, be it your Secretary of Treasury or even you, that little fellow packed you into the corner like he did with that 1969 bill and make you agree to go along with a bunch of junk that you didn't really believe in.
That's all right.
Well, for example, time that Albert Wolf got so hanged in them and all that, we lost a lot of wool that we brought in. It didn't help the government's fiscal position or anything.
And it didn't help Albert.
And it's not, that's right.
Yeah.
allowed that way. But whatever we do in terms of a minimum tax or anything else, of course, must be carefully justified as not being a tax increase. It's a tax increase for some and a deduction for others, so that overall it's the same. See my point, John?
Yeah. And we have, right, if they're talking about the tax anywhere, it's got to be to all of a equity type package that's a wash in terms of its net impact. And as some higher takes away there.
If you check it, I saw some figures that I just ran across the other day. So you ought to check this. I'm told that there have been 300,000 gravel drilled in this country. Now, if you consider the fact that you've got about 35,000 wells, some of them very small, only producing 4 barrels a day and stuff like that. But some are very marginal. Most of them are marginal. But to get 35,000 wells, most of which are marginal, only about 5,000, which are really good wells, you've got 300, if that's correct, if you've got 300,000 dry holes, you can just see the feeding that these other things have taken out trapped by oil. And of course, people want, but the fact not that probably most people know about, some damn guy goes up there to supply a restaurant somewhere, goes to some New York nightclub, and he's looking for some guy, some man to buy a lease from him, and with some hot money, you might say, to cut down income taxes by October. And he's talked it up and lit it up, saying this is a big tax giver. And those are the kind of people that give us a bad name and a bad reputation. If you take the poor devil who goes out there, put him in the drive.
Well, the kind of thing we ought to be trying to have these syndicated deals that are growing very fast.
Yeah.
It's an industry now.
Yeah.
It's an actual industry, and the accountants and lawyers are the ones who are getting rich off. But I think we can hit that.
And that thing could be drafted, I think, in such a way.
Against accountants and lawyers.
Well, I think you can draft it in such a way, too, that this thing that the advantage that goes to the general operator does not go to the fellow who's just in it for a tax advantage. Now, while you're at it, though, George, you better keep in mind, too, that you do want people to put money in.
Right.
In
the
reserve.
There are ways of, I think, well, let's talk about this.
You'll drop it. Now, let me come to one other subject.
I'm going to excuse you.
That's all right, sir.
Well, we're going to talk about that. We're going to trade now, anyway.
Right.
I'd like to brief this morning, so
you
get my Q&A.
Yeah,
well, thank you very much.
Oh, that's right. No, we didn't keep you.
No, that's all right. You're also.
I think you just spoke a little bit about myself here, but
brother. Right. Let me tell you, let's talk a little now about, let's get a little bit of our problem, our concerns about trade, if you would. Would you like to take a little time on the trade thing so you can get a feel of the
rest
of where we're looking?
Well, first of all, we have a real problem. The deal is trade. Our trade balance has not improved. We have made some headway in getting other countries to recognize it, but not too much. The Japanese are very difficult to bring around, and it's quite noticeable that they respond most quickly when you hit them with something. That is, they get all excited about countervailing duties.
we have got to be in a position where we can go up as well as down, and we don't have that position now.
Well, Mr. President, I don't think you're going to have enough weapons if we get into this. Now, if I could just tell you, Sheriff, that the experience I had back when I was the majority whip in the Johnson president, I was chairman of mine today, Henry Bowers picked up the president's request and flew me down the ranch, and he told me at the time that it looked to him that the kind of deficit that we were running was something that you could not negotiate away. He said that in many respects, our deficit was the other guy's profit. And that,
to pick it out of trade deficit.
Yeah,
not a national.
But we had at that time theory, we had a trade surplus, but now if you put the freight on the imports, it took off, it took the foreign aid off your exports, you know. So he said that the kind of situation we were in, that you couldn't get out of that trap. It looked to him like you do out of $5 billion just the entire money, that you couldn't get out of that by negotiating that way, because those people weren't going to give you that much advantage. Seen to him that the only thing he got it was by taking some action unilaterally and saying, hey, what we're going to do, and after you do that, then negotiate from there. Well, he went to that conference, and I regret to say that the special trade representative and Dean Rusk were able to tell the president decided to let him negotiate. So I bet he managed to negotiate with about $500 million that deficit, and he needed to try to get it up about $5 billion. Now, since that time, I've become convinced that we had it completely within our tolerance to level off this trade deficit when we want to do it. But it's going to make some people mad, have some people howl when you do it. But you're going to have to take some of the forceful type of that John Connolly took in some of what you're talking about, but I think that you're going to have more tools than that. Now, here's the approach that appeals to me. You had Peterson down here saying that you ought to try to get every country to agree that what their objective should be would be to have a balance. Well, you can't get them to agree that. There's Japan insisting that that plan would take it to run a $12 billion surplus. At least half of it coming out of us. Now, how do you get those people, if they won't do it, how can you make them do it? I think you can make them do it. You can do it from this end by saying, now here, and you can vary this. How you want to vary it? Here's a tool you can use of it. You can say here. Our balance of payments will not stand. This responsibility will not stand these continuous enormous deficits. So we're going to give people, you might say, a trading coupon for stuff they buy here. And every one of those trading coupons can be used to put something into this country. So like some countries that have a deficit like Spain, they ought to be tickled pink with it. But not that doesn't even beat them for a second. They can even, if they can find something to ship, they can ship us more. Or they can even sell to somebody, do some business with somebody who's got a deficit trading with us. At least somebody's got a surplus trading with us. Trade with them and put something into his market, earn some dollars from France, let's say, and put those dollars back in here, if they want to Spain, to their purchases. And if you do it that way, you'd be saying to Japan, now here, if you did that to them at all, they'd be short by $5 billion this year on the tickets that you can put all their imports in the United States market. You'd say to them, well, all right, now we're not going to make you have one ticket for $1,000 instead of $1,000, and we'll give you a two-for-one advantage. You got a $1,000 ticket, you can send $2,000 worth into it. But over a period of time, this thing has to come into balance. So you can say on your end that if we're going to make our exports and our imports come into balance, and need the easy to take it to do it. That's just a country board where I think it's truly my idea. But that's one way you could do it. And of course, they can trade with third party countries. We've got we have a deficit trading with any Latin country. A lot of them have a deficit with them. They could buy something from those countries and in turn pick up by the third-party country pick up some stamps to ship things in here. We have something along that line just the other way around on our oil import system. When you buy the petrochemicals, you know, we say that if you bring a ton, if you ship a ton of petrochemical products outside the country,
county likely to change this by this legislation?
Well, this, if you got to ask, like, this is an emergency business that we talked about.
This is not, this is a different topic.
We should be so constructive that the president would not have to put it on all in person from every country. But if we feel, as we, as is obvious, it's true, that the biggest problem is with Japan, we can just put it right on that. And so we would be able to pick out and point out particular countries' goods with this tool. I think your ticket business, that's sort of the objective, all right. And in fact, I think we need to have a surplus, not just a balance, because of the other kinds of flows that are involved in our country.
Because as a matter of fact, we're giving so much, providing so much in aid, and also, let's face it, the United States provides the rent for Japan. We provide the rent of defense for all of Western Europe and for the damn Canadians who are so miserable to deal with at the moment. And therefore, and basically, we ought to start linking our defense with our trade. What do you think?
Well,
no sense in those people saying, well, you know what I mean? It's like we negotiate the offset of the German. Sure, it's in our interest too. But on the other hand, as George says, we need a surplus.
It's good in some areas, Mr. President, and in other areas it's not. Now, for example, if you talk to the French, they don't give a damn what our defense policy is. So they don't give it to this. And you go there to Europe, and those people are not going to be impressed with it. That's why it seems to me that for those people, we ought to talk about a deficit in the terms that I like to talk about. When you put it on a CIF basis, we most of them keep their books, that takes a $3 billion figure. So if they're talking about $6 billion deficit, you're talking about a $9 billion deficit. Take out the soft currency sales or make an adjustment to see how much dough they brought in, and that puts you up about $11 billion deficit that you're running. If you take out the soft currency sales and make an adjustment for them and put your spin on the imports, those things, I think, will make just a big adjustment. And of course, we need to get in line with the answer. I guess the free trade answer is to buy more bucks. Well, somebody's got to get some leverage if you want to do it.
That's what we need, and that's what we're looking for, and I think it's what we are trying to construct is a sense of version of your coupon system, where the coupon is a dollar bill, and that's what gets passed around, and that's what you have to exchange, and it isn't satisfactory just to have those dollar bills pile up abroad.
Yes.
They are a symbol of the imbalance that is there, and that we're seeing the result of that now with this speculation that's going on, and we'll continue to see speculation of that kind until we get a rearrangement of the system, unfortunately.
Yes.
But what we're talking about altogether is a trade bill that would put the president in a very strong bargaining position, able to go to Japan and say, now look, this situation has got to get straightened out. And if we can't do it together, I'm going to do it by myself. And here are the tools that I've got to do.
Well, that's the one thing I would observe by all means, Mr. President, if you try to, if you get yourself something.
And one thing was my cigarettes of interruption in a moment. As you know, all this crap about the president seeking power and all that sort of thing and so forth, you ought to have an answer to that. Because some will question, well, now we're giving the president too much power. Believe me, it isn't that we that I'm seeking any more power here. But on the other hand, we can't negotiate by you go to the Japanese and say, look here, unless you do this or that, I'll ask the Congress to do something. And they'll say, well, isn't that nice?
Yeah. No.
And they'll offer the Congress too.
Right.
So you see, we gotta have the power. You have to set in there a consultative machinery, probably, George, where we will inform the Senate and the House, don't you think so? So that it doesn't look as if it's just an arbitrary search for power. After consultation with the legislative leaders, the appropriate counsel. How does that sound to you?
Fine.
So then you've got an argument against the Rockstar and others.
Mr. President, I will help you pass a bill, provided I reserve the judgment to offer that. We don't manufacture steel down that way, but maybe a chance to ship it to the farm, but that's not a business.
Conley has made a point that I think George and I want to, I mentioned the other day, Tom's here, but you should have some to science. I want to consider, he feels very strong, he puts a D in looking at our dealers before, oil companies, so for some people we know, the Venezuela, the mid-aged occasions. He says that first, the United States is the big market. Everybody needs the United States and would like to come in. Second, so that's one advantage. On the other hand, the other two factors in our list is the producer of the oil ones and the carrier of the oil. Now he says, if the producer of the oil, if one individual government or whatever it be, controls both the production and the carrier, with the tanker. That puts the producer, the consumer, in a hell of a bad position. So Conley's point is that the United States, in dealing with these, with our people abroad, whether it's the Saudis or our friends, the Iranians, or let alone the Gulf States, perhaps, countries, he says we ought to have both the consumer and we ought to have the tankers. So that by having both, then we got them to the throat. They got to get the oil out of there. We don't have to throw it. At least we're in a better market.
One more piece
of time. I asked John that yesterday, George, you know, at the end of our meeting, and he said that was not in that program, any kind of a tanker's name. Maybe it's a budget problem. But I think that makes some sense.
It's like most of these deals, like people proposing these Russian deals and Algerian deals and so on, are tying the tanker thing into it. And I think just in terms of sort of the bargaining power of it, if the oil and gas is somebody else's ground, well, we have a hard time controlling that.
No.
But the more of the movement of that to the market that we can control, the better position we're in.
Is it possible, George, is it just too much of a sort of, for, I know you're talking about deep water ports, you know, you've got enlarged ports. However, is it possible that we ought to figure on, maybe we can't build it here, maybe the cost here, but we certainly ought to figure, see, that the United States, because we always do it through private enterprise, maybe it can't be done through government, but sure, maybe we consider about as significant and large as the American tanker, but government helps, of course, by subsidy.
Well, Mr. President, you can do it easy enough just by saying that the oil
has to be carried.
That's the American bottom. Now, you can, that's easy enough to do it. And, you know, we almost prevailed for that position, even without the support of your administration. But the fellows in the oil industry had a good point. These major companies had a good point on their side. They said, well, look, you can't tell what these boys might want to pull a strike or something. Might interrupt our supply system. The fact of the matter, we could be more sure that we could land the fuel here. We could hire those crews anywhere we bless it well please, and we can, if you've got to use it, these American unions. Now, they've not got that Paul Hall there, boy, they've got those fellows, but they've not got a good right. They'll make an arrangement to guarantee them that they won't have a strike interrupt.
Well, Paul Hall, at the present time, our relations with him are so good. He's damn well under control.
He's a member of the Labor Management Advisory Committee.
He's being very constructive. He's a very good citizen, in my opinion.
Well, he claimed that, I believe they claimed that the day you hadn't had a major strike, but I don't know how long, a tremendous amount of time. And client David House saw down there, he was on Conservation though some years ago, it was a guy that said, he said, well, people want to blame that and call it hijack. He said, if I were that, I'd be doing exactly the same thing. I want to make every dollar I can make for my country, or whatever the franc or whatever currency it is. You can't blame them for making all the money they can from what they've got to sell. But if we don't control that ship, then somebody's going to control it. And when you've got American sitting in American-owned ships, that's a work, that's jobs. And the big end of jobs is making the steel and fabricating that in the ships, not even moving the ships around. So it's a big item down the payments process, it's a piece of business. But I don't want to do it in a responsible way, because if you can't bring it back, I think it'll be the same for the country.
Look at this. But they're thinking about last year, Mr. President, this week.
up there on that hill, charging around here, we got to go to war with you before you could even get your cabinet appointed. I mean, to me, that's utterly ridiculous, but, and I think it's horrible politics. My guess is the Democrats get beat again in 4 years, maybe just because of that kind of damn foolishness. Man, just been re-elected, the biggest majority in terms of numbers in the history of the country, and they can't let the man take control of office before they want to talk about the inviting up to defend himself, because he has the impression he's a commander-in-chief, for example, and that kind of thing. It's irritating me. I don't agree with it at all, but I know that you want to do what the Senate can only help you do that.
I appreciate what he does about the support of the Senate.
recommend out what they thought was tax reform, which in effect meant the Stan Serry program, which is the Jordan Governor program, by the way.
Yeah.
Now, so he was Jordan Governor's tax advisor, put that new program in. But this UAW crowd had in mind that they want to control to be the chairman, because those guys can make a few more dollars than that. And they want to take, let's say, 32 votes and make that into a majority by forcing the rest of these guys to go along by instructing these committee chairmen and making them do the bidding of the majority of the caucus. You see, that parlayed about 32 votes into 62. Now, that's what these fellows are working at. And the heads, frankly, they took about every trick they planned to take in this Congress and reorganized the Democratic side now. And there are a lot of these fellows, Mr. President, and I may wind up being one of them eventually when they say, well, I guess if rape is inevitable, I'm not going to relax and enjoy it or get with it. You can't let them join them. But that's the kind of thing those people have got going. I don't want that to happen. But your people are going to have to realize the dangers implicit in that.
Right.
Now, what event I've been seeing is that he was telling me that George Romney said he thought he might try to organize something, to try to offset something. But this thing, they're talking about this attack on seniority, they got a lot more in mind than just putting out some old maintenance. You notice that they didn't...
They're interested in the ideas.
Common called a nationwide press release that appears in my state, and it was sufficiently impossible that the... He had an editorial right there in my hometown by a guy who's for you, not for them. And he's for me. Yet he's here in the editorial that's supporting that, what that press release said. And that press release, they talk about all the defects of seniority system, and they don't take out the right time to be kicked out. No, I ought to be kicked out. Mel ought to be kicked out. Jimmy Eason ought to be kicked out, you see. But it's the fellows who have been doing an effective job, but not just acting for the party leadership of their party. Now,
maybe I should check on this, what this monetary thing.
Oh, sure. Right ahead.